Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th of September, Anno Domini 2014, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second quarter century of this show. And it is also Dave Enright's birthday. He's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest.
Trying to outrun his birthday?
Trying to outrun his birthday. But we're here to bring you news, views. So kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here we go. Apple is once again setting new pre-order records for its new iPhone. After announcing a new overnight record last week, Apple revealed on Monday that it has sold more than 4 million iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus handsets in just 24 hours. iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus are better in every way. And we are thrilled customers love them as much as we do, said Apple CEO Tim Cook in a statement. Pre-orders for iPhone and iPhone 6 Plus set a new record for Apple, and we can't wait to get our best iPhones yet into the hands of customers starting this Friday. The demand for new iPhones is exceeding the initial pre-order supply, according to Apple. While a significant amount will be delivered to customers beginning on Friday and throughout September, many iPhone pre-orders are scheduled to be delivered in October. The impressive sales come after a frustrating pre-order process revealed that iPhone 6 Plus devices appear to be in short supply. While Apple doesn't always reveal numbers for its iPhone pre-orders, the company sold 2 million iPhone 5 handsets within 24 hours and 5 million in the first opening weekend of sales. Apple sold a combined 9 million iPhone 5S and 5C devices last year during the initial retail weekend. Meanwhile, people stood in line for hours, sometimes days, to get the new iPhone. In Rochester, a friend of the show, Skeeter Harris, sat online for 14 hours and even got his mug on the news. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and we all want to thank Jerry for getting the site back up and running today. The poll is iPhone 6 is here, and your choices are: I waited in line 14 hours, I waited in line about an hour, walked right in and picked it up, I'm smart, I ordered online, and I what now? So far, we've got about 24, and all but one of you have said I what now, and I'm smart, I ordered online gets the other vote. And we know you're going to have more to say about this because it's the iPhone 6. So if you slide down on the right, you will see under Fascinating Stuff, the forums. And if you select that, it will take you to our list of forums. The second forum is the poll discussion. And the first thing on the poll discussion is the iPhone 6 is here. And there are already 5 posts there. So join in and do that while you're listening to the show, because what the heck? You can always multitask, right?
Yeah. It's that two different mindsets that I have to wait in line overnight in order to be first in line to get the box in the store. Or if you'd have ordered it online day one, you would have had it by now, delivered to your house by a uniformed courier.
Right.
wait a couple of weeks, you can walk into the store and buy anyone you want. So it's the people that have to have it now versus the people, I'll just wait a couple of weeks and see what happens.
Right. Oh, yeah, you've got the Dear iPhone 6 users.
Yeah, there was interesting. I saw it on a bunch of blogs. I don't know who started it. iPhone 6 users, welcome to 2012, comparing the iPhone 6 with a Nexus 4 released in November of 2012. And all of the features that the iPhone 6 has, the Nexus has had for 2 years now. And at the bottom, they're saying, you know, in 2016, you guys will love wireless charging, water resistance, IR blasting, multi-user support. So all the stuff that Android has had. But we don't know about that stuff because we're iPhone users.
Because Apple hasn't invented it yet.
Yeah. But one of the things that, that is interesting is how Apple deals with the rest of the industry and related industries. Google created NFC payments a couple, 3 years ago, and almost no one noticed.
Right.
There's very few companies that, that accept NFC payments from the phone. You know, you were saying you went to McDonald's and they didn't know what you did. You waved your phone in front of the scanner and are you going to give me the money? No, I just did. But yeah. Apple goes to all the credit card companies, all the banks, you know, 220,000 merchant locations across the country and signs deals with them on how to accept payments at the credit card.
Well, and that's the difference between...
And to take 15 cents per hundred.
Exactly. that is also the difference between a company that's run by engineers mm-hmm. that invents new technology and just sends it out there and says, what are you going to do with this?
Yeah.
And a company that doesn't create new stuff, but markets really, right. really well.
They make the stuff that's out there better.
Right. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Particularly, you know, even, give us a call if you waited online.
Yeah. Even, you know, the original iPod, the iPod Classic was silently discontinued the other day, the hard drive-based iPod.
Right.
You know, there had been other MP3 players before, but Apple made it better, put in that hard drive so you could store more than five or six songs on it.
Right.
Even you know, the original iPhone, there had been smartphones before that, but Apple made it better with the screen and the touch screen. So that's sort of been Apple's thing all along is was that Edison or Tesla?
One of the Tesla.
Edison may, in fact, there was a really neat show on this week, 10 Things You Didn't Know About Edison and Tesla. Edison's first patent was for a voting machine for Congress.
Right.
He was a telegraph operator, and he had to receive the telegraph reports of all the voting in Congress. And every congressman would stand up, give his name, and talk for a while before he cast his vote. So Edison invented this machine where you had a yes or no button at your desk. And he got laughed out of Congress and said, boy, we don't want that, because every time I get up to talk, I might sway some people down the line. So Tesla went along and said, all right, well, we don't, you know, inventing something new may not that be that big a deal, but I'll take something that's out there already and make it better. Even Edison is the light bulb. Edison didn't invent the light bulb. He made the tungsten carbide filament that makes the light bulb work better. And in fact, one of the things that showed Edison's most profitable invention, the storage battery.
Yep.
And we still use those today.
Yes, we do. And they haven't gotten better.
Yeah, and people still haven't figured out how a lot of Tesla's inventions work.
Right, and that's the big thing. Tesla did a lot of stuff in his head. And once he had worked it out to his satisfaction in his head, he rarely built it. Everything he built worked.
Yep.
But he rarely built stuff because once he made it work in his head, he lost interest in it. And Edison, of course, was a direct current guy.
Yep.
Tesla was the alternating current guy. Tesla won in terms of the stuff we use every day.
Yeah, Westinghouse was with Tesla, and Edison had, what was his name, John Brown, a PR guy. And they finally decided that Tesla's wireless power, you couldn't make any money selling wire.
Right.
And Tesla's whole concept was for the good of humanity. Why would you want to make money off of that? And Westinghouse kind of, you know, go away, boy, you're bothering me.
Right.
But Tesla and Mark Twain were huge friends. So back during this whole current wars, when they were trying to show that AC was more dangerous and they electrocuted elephants, there's a picture of Mark Twain holding two conductors with a giant electrical, plasma ball, basically, and peeking around the corner is Tesla.
Yep.
So then, and Edison started getting some celebrities to come along on his DC current thingies, and really interesting show on one of the learning channels.
Yeah.
Besides the current war movie about the whole AC versus DC things.
Right.
Yep.
And of course, we now have the Tesla Museum.
Yep.
At Warden Cliff.
I hope they rebuild the tower.
I hope so too. What happened there was the guy who does the oatmeal online comic had a thing about Tesla, and then started a campaign called "Let's Build a GD Tesla Museum." And he wanted to buy Wardenclyffe because it was up for sale. They were going to turn it into, I don't know, condos or something. They really just wanted the land on the coast in New Jersey. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
So he had a campaign about it, and he wrote to Elon Musk, the guy who owns Tesla Motors.
Yeah.
And said, really, you should be donating $1 million to us.
Or
and,
more.
And Elon Musk wrote back and said, you know, you're right. And he did. So they bought it. But now there's a campaign to buy a brick.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they bought the land. They own it now, but they haven't got enough money to renovate it yet. So they're working on that. And if you find the thing on the museum, you can post a link for it.
Yep.
Some pretty cool stuff. Tesla is the guy who invented the 20th century, essentially. And invented all the stuff that we use today. He invented the AND gate, without which computers would not be possible. He invented he invented a torpedo that you controlled wirelessly. So he invented RC, radio controlled stuff. He holds the patent for radio. Your iPhone or Android phone would not be possible without Tesla's patents. So
who cares about Marconi?
Marconi did what Edison did. He took other people's stuff and made it either more viable or just touted himself with it. Marconi's the guy who sent the first transatlantic radio message.
Yep.
So it's a whole different deal there. But yeah, Tesla was an amazing person. And a sad case physically, personally, but an amazing human being.
We've been to the Tesla statue in Niagara Falls.
Right.
That's where he set up one of his first labs to harness the power of the falls to transmit power.
And he's the one who put in those generators.
Yep, the original turbine generators. Right. Yeah. And that's basically why AC-1, the AC-DC current, is AC can be transmitted farther before you need a substation.
Right.
So getting electricity from the falls to the city would have taken hundreds more DC substations back when the city was a few miles away from the falls.
Right, right.
And so that's one of the reasons it won. And one of the last original Tesla generator stations is now a private car garage, and you can see some of the original cabling running through it.
Yep.
And because the city never really preserved any of that stuff.
Right. Well, because that was just junk to throw away when you were done.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of an amazing situation with Tesla. He really did invent the 20th century, but he really did not write down a lot of what he had created. And so we have a lot of thoughts that he's had,
yep.
But we never saw actual devices.
He was a great inventor, but he was a horrible record keeper.
Once he had built it in his head, unless he was a little unsure, he rarely actually built a prototype. But his little earthquake machine was apparently something he could put in his pocket. He said he attacked. They said several people. Twain was one of the people who witnessed this. He attached it to one of the uprights in the laboratory, one of the load bearing members, and suddenly, you know, hours later it took. But suddenly there were earthquakes in the area, and cable cars were jumped off the track, and it was a whole bunch of stuff.
Was that the one that if you attach it to a person, it makes other things move?
I don't have any idea.
he had an invention that apparently could do that, too.
I don't doubt that. But at any rate, that was that. But to get back to the iPhone for just a minute, there are an amazing number of people who bought it on that first 24-hour thing. Four million of them.
4 million in 24 hours. I think there was 10 million in opening weekend.
Yep, 10 million the opening weekend. And now there are still people who are waiting because now they're back ordered.
Right, yeah, it's 3 to 4 weeks on the Apple website if you try to order it now.
Right.
But then it shows up at your house by itself.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I understand the people who have to have it first, Yep. But, you know.
Did you see Stephen Colbert?
No.
He they had a clip where he's talking to his iPhone 5 and then, oh, wait a minute. In his jacket, pulls out his 6 and then yells at the iPhone 5, I hate you, you're old, you're out, and throws it over his shoulder and starts stroking the iPhone 6. Why, yes, I do have an iPhone 6.
Yeah, I am sure he's not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's am I hearing music? I am. All right, that music tells me we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Sound Bites, brought to you by Nikola Tesla, who invented radio, right here on the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And do we have someone on the line? Why, yes. Yes, we do. We have Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Well, I got two questions regarding my iPhone 4S. I'll ask Steve the simple one first. Can I get any earphone mic set wired, not Bluetooth, and plug it into my iPhone 4S, and will it work?
Yeah, pretty much any wired headset microphone will work. Generally, there's four tips on the or four sections on the tip, left, right, ground, and mic. Of course, the ones that are marked for iPhone are probably the best ones to stick with. But pretty much any of them should work.
And by four sections like that, what you really mean is there are three black bands.
Right, separating it into four
right.
sections. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now the other question regarding iOS 8. Should I be updating my 4S with OS 8 or not, or is it going to be performance issues because my phone is so old?
Yeah, that's a big thing. For anyone who didn't know, Apple also released a new operating system for their phones this week. iOS 8 has come out. I'm bringing up the specs here. One of the things that we're seeing is that it requires about 5 gigabytes of free space on your device.
Whoa.
In order to install. So if you don't have 5 gigs free, you may not be able to do it. So the trick is you do it from your computer instead. But one of the things we're seeing is that a lot of the new features in iOS 8 are companion features to Mac 10.10 Yosemite. And what's happening is that people who have upgraded to iOS 8 who are not running Yosemite, because it hasn't been released yet, they're finding problems. iCloud Drive works on the phone, but iCloud then stops working on your computer. So a lot of the syncing features quit working between the phone and the computer because they're running different OSs. So if you also have a Mac, I would definitely say wait on iOS 8. And then a lot of people are waiting on iOS 8 because we're waiting for 8.0.1. Let the first bug fixes come out and let someone else figure out what's wrong with it. And in your specific case with the 4S, even though it's compatible, we are seeing a lot of people are saying with the 4S, it's too slow. And so don't upgrade to iOS 8 if you're running a 4S. At the moment, if you download the previous 7.1.2 was the previous version, you can downgrade your OS. But eventually what happens is Apple removes those old versions of the system, and so you can't downgrade easily anymore. You have to find a third-party source for those old systems. So I would say to most people, unless you're those bleeding edge people that had to wait in line to get your new iPhone 6, hold off on iOS 8 for a while, at least until Yosemite comes out, which we're expecting to be next month, if not until the 8.0.1 comes out.
Now, for those who don't, like myself, don't have a Mac, I have a Windows PC, is it ever going to be, should I forever not download OS 8 because it's just going to make my 4S too slow?
That's a big issue right now, is on the 4S, it does tend to be too slow. Annoyingly for us Mac users, Apple has released the new iCloud sharing, iCloud Drive for Windows. So it's out for Windows before it is for Mac. So there are features available on Windows that you can't get on the Mac yet. And one of those big ones is the iCloud Family Share. One of the big problems we see with families is that, mom, dad, each of the kids will have their own Apple IDs and they'll buy their own stuff. But if I buy a song and my wife wants to listen to it too, she has to use my ID to get it for free, or she has to pay a second time to get it. So now with iOS 8 and Yosemite, you'll be able to have iCloud Family Sharing. You'll be able to share, I think it's up to 5 Apple IDs. And if your husband buys something on one Apple ID, the wife can get it on her device for free as a share. We're hoping it's just as easy to split people from the family share, because that's always been the thing. I want to merge when I got married, but now that we're divorced, I need to split my sections again. But yeah, in your case, I would say hold off on the installing it on the 4S. That is the oldest phone that it is compatible with. And see how other people are reporting it, and maybe even wait to the 8.0.1, and they might be able to work on some of the performance issues.
Okay, and lastly, I guess I'm going to ask this then. I wasn't going to, but if I got an iPhone 5S, how is it with the 5S later on when I'm eligible for an upgrade with Verizon?
Yeah, the 5S is fine. That's last year's phone. It's got the A7 processor in it. That's the big thing with the phones is every year they have a much faster processor in them. And now the 5S is one of the cheap phones that the 6 has come out. And so it works fine on the 5S.
Okay.
Eventually, it will be pre-installed. Right now, it is pre-installed on iPhone 6. And the 5C and 5S that's currently for sale as the cheaper phones will eventually come pre-installed on those as well.
Okay. Very good. Thanks for your help.
Sure. And one of the things that's a bit nicer on the Apple world than the Android world is Apple does go back six models of phone.
Right.
When Google releases a new version of Android, it almost never makes it to some of the other phones.
Right.
Because each of the carriers, Verizon, AT&T, have to put their stamp on it. And then the handset makers, HTC and Motorola, have to put their stamp on it. And so by the time it may get down to your phone, it's a couple of years have gone by.
Right.
In fact, a friend of mine was it the HTC One, I think, from a couple of years ago, and he just got Jelly Bean, which was a couple of years ago.
Right.
So it's difficult because there's so many other people involved. That's one of the big things in the Android world is if you buy a pure Google phone with no other carrier stuff on it, then you can pretty sure that you're going to get the latest stuff from Google immediately.
Right. The problem has never been Google. The problem has always been the carriers.
Yeah.
So if you get the straight Nexus, it used to be the Nexus brand. And then there was Google, whatever they were going to call it. And they've abandoned that program. It was never an official program. They hadn't started it yet, but you could always get the real thing.
Right. And it made it a little confusing because Samsung had a Galaxy Nexus, which is not quite the
Google Nexus. The problem is they all put something on it.
Yeah.
My Galaxy S5 has some sort of Touch Whiz or Super Touch, or I don't remember what it was called, front end on it. That's okay. It's not a pure Google experience, but it's okay. And it doesn't really get in my way. But there's an amazing amount of junk, just cruft and bloat, that was put on it by Verizon. Much of it I can deactivate. They finally let that happen.
Yeah, some countries have actually started legally mandating that you have to be able to remove the crap that comes on your phone.
Right. Well, you can't remove it, but you can deactivate it.
Yep.
So there's a section in applications that where you can turn on and off some apps.
Yep.
Yeah, on my Sprint phone, I can turn on and off most of my apps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so because of that, this is a much better, my phone is a much better experience than it would have been otherwise. But yeah, the ability to have, that is one of the things Apple did right. They control what's on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You want our phone, this is what you get. That's both good and bad, of course.
Yeah.
But it, what it does mean is that the experience is what Apple wants it to be. Now, there will those who will argue that on the Android phone, the experience is what you want it to be, which is superior. But that's your choice, and, citizen.
Yep. And we're also hearing interesting rumors that Samsung is going to abandon Android and make their own OS.
Well, they can.
Yep. So they don't have to... Well, beholden to Google isn't quite the right word.
Since the operating system is free, I'm a little confused by that.
Well, apparently Google has design guidelines that are written with a sledgehammer.
So well, right.
When you're designing an app for Google Android, you have to do it their way.
Well, same as Apple, right? I mean, they have the design guidelines, and if they're good for Apple, then they're good for Google too. You can't you can't say one is and one isn't. But that's the way that works. And if you want your own, what's his name? Amazon did that with the Fire Phone. That's basically an Android experience underneath, but they've forked it.
Yep.
As we say in the Linux community, when you take something that it already exists and you create your own version of it, they call it forking it, because you can imagine you come to a fork in the road. You can either take the original product or the changed product. So they forked Android, and now they've made their own Fire Phone, and that's fine. Google put it out as an open source operating mm-hmm. system, so you can do that. There's not an issue with that. That's not a problem.
And apparently, one of the things is if you don't use Google Android, you can't have the Google Play Store.
Well, and that's
right. Which is
right.
Where you get all the Google or all the Android apps.
Right. So well, Android has their, not Amazon, rather, has their own store, which is why they have the ability to do that.
So HTC and Motorola and the other vendors would have to make their own stores too.
Right.
Which they probably want, because they want to keep all the money, not give any to Google.
Right. And then that becomes an issue for the developers.
Well, HTC, to an extent, does have their own store. It's very limited as to what apps are available, but they do have their own store.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it becomes a question for developers. How do you decide
mm-hmm.
where you're going to put your apps, and how much work is it to put an app in this store and that store and the other store and the next store?
It's already so fragmented between the different Androids, the different iOSs, and Windows. Let's not forget Windows Phone.
Right.
Or BlackBerry.
Right. It's not Windows Phone anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just Windows.
Right.
It's Windows that runs on your phone, because that sounds better.
Yeah. But we've had people in the Mac community asking this. The new iPhone 6 Plus is 1920x1080 resolution. So in order to design an app, you have to make your graphics at 1920x1080.
Right.
Well, the screens, Mac laptop screens aren't that big, unless you get up to a 15-inch.
Right.
So in order to develop an app, you need to get an expensive 15-inch computer, or you have to have an external HD monitor. But a lot of the apps are done portrait, so you have to have an HD monitor that pivots,
right?
So you can do it portrait to see all the pixels to get your app working right.
Right.
And that used well. That used to be one of the advantages of Apple, is that the phones were all one size,
right?
So you didn't have to worry about the graphic resolution. But then they added Retina, they added bigger screen sizes. So now we're back to the same point where hundreds of megabytes of your app may be graphics for different size screens.
Right. And now Chrome, Google is leveraging the Chrome OS. On a Chromebook, you can now start running Android apps. There are four or five that are available now, including Evernote, which is great. And others are coming. So with that capability, it opens up a whole new market. There are lots of schools all over the country that are buying Chromebooks for students. And because for just a couple of $100, you know, you can give students a computer to use.
I like the website, OMG Chrome.
Yeah. No, it's OMG Chrome.
Yeah.
And you can run Android apps on the Chromebook. There are hacks that have been allowing you to do it for a while, but it's also now becoming legitimate. There's a path through Google themselves that let you do that.
They have the first batch limited number of apps, and so the hacks let you run anything.
Right.
Although the problem there is it's a hack. It may not run right.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But you know, Evernote runs. I forget what all they are, but there are several now that do, and more coming. Which just leverages that now.
Yeah.
It also means that running that stuff on either a Chromebook or your phone means you can also cast it to a Chromecast and see it on the television on a big screen monitor. So if you're doing some sort of presentation or whatever, you can do it that way as well. I discovered something very cool the other day. I put Pandora on my television. I cast it from my phone to Pandora. And then without thinking about it, I stopped it on my phone. It did not stop on my television. So I don't have to keep my phone running and wear down the battery on that. So I cast Pandora to my Chromecast. It's now playing on my television. I turned it off. On my phone, I stopped it. I actually quit the application, and it kept playing on the television. It was very cool. So I was pretty pleased. I was pretty pleased with that. It was a nice little thing to accidentally discover. So we'll be seeing, I think, a lot more. You know, Apple has had an ecosystem forever, and it's interesting to see that Google is now trying the same thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 40 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Stan from Avon on the line. Welcome, Stan. What's your question?
Stan?
Yeah.
Steven.
Steven. Okay, we'll take Steven instead. Apparently, I misheard. My fault. What's up, Steven?
I don't have a question. You were talking about, you know, earlier in the show about, you know, Tesla Museum and about wireless. I thought I'd let people know that there's a wireless museum in Bloomfield that I think it's like one of only two in the world.
Oh,
I see the sign for that every time I'm going through Bloomfield, and I gotta stop at that one of these days.
Yeah. Well, can you give us an address?
It's 6925. Around 5 and 20. It's they got information on the Antique Wireless Association website. Unfortunately, they don't have the hours. I know they're open today and tomorrow from, I think it's 2 to 5.
Well, we'll look it up. Steve is looking it up as we go, and we'll post a little something about it shortly. Is this the one?
Yeah, Tuesdays 10 to 3, Saturday and Sunday 2 to 5.
There you go. Excellent. Thanks.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that. Clearly, we're all fans of the wireless, since we're all either listening to it or talking into it.
There's so many cool things to do around Rochester, and since we live here, we never get to do any of them.
Wait, I know. When I lived in New York City, I never went to the Empire State Building or the Statue of Liberty or any of that stuff until I'd been there for a while and friends came to visit. You know, and I said, well, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to go to the Empire State Building. Well, that's cool. I've actually never been there, and I live here. It's the same thing in Rochester. We don't, I mean, there are places that people come to this city to visit or are in the area like Niagara Falls. We don't go.
Yeah. I remember being in New York once for something, and we wanted to go see the Empire State Building, and so we asked the doorman at the hotel we were in, where's the Empire State Building? And he looked disgusted and pointed.
Yeah.
Pretty much any building you're in, you can see the Empire State Building.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And then I don't know why, but we decided to get a taxi, and it was like two blocks away. And so the taxi drove around for 10 minutes, weaving through the traffic, and then pulled up in front of it. Well, that was a lot better than a few years later when I was at the at one of the Macworld shows, and the Javits Center was where the show was, and there was a party down in Times Square that for one of the vendors. Oh, well, that's only 8 or 9 blocks. That doesn't look very far, and I decided to walk it.
Yeah.
New York City blocks are really big.
They're really big. I used to, back when I had knees, I used to walk from the corner of 4th and 12th, which is down in the West Village, all the way up to Broadway and 9th. Every day for my show. That's a decent little hike. And I used to walk it twice, up and back, of course.
Yeah.
Nice people. I loved New York. I really did. I really did.
Did you make it there?
No, I made it everywhere else.
Everywhere else, but not there. Did you ever run out into the square and throw your hat in the air?
You know, oddly, I never did, and I realized that's...
Oh, God, that's dating us.
I don't want to date you. I'm sorry. I'm a happily married man. But, yeah, that was then.
Okay, that got really weird really quickly.
Yeah, it would. For those of you who shop, Home Depot said Thursday that the security breach it reported this month allowed cyber thieves to cull information from 56 million credit and debit cards, far worse in terms of data loss than a similar attack last year on the Target store chain. The malicious software or malware was placed on Home Depot point-of-sale terminals or cash registers from April to September, the company said in a news release. The malware was found in Home Depot stores in the USA and Canada. The number of cards involved in Home Depot's loss dwarfs the 40 million Target says were compromised over a three-week period. Target said that breach also resulted in the theft of personal data for up to 70 million customers, including names, phone numbers, mailing addresses, or email addresses, but of course the amount of overlap is unknown. The Home Depot and Target cases show that big box retailers are particularly vulnerable to cyber thieves. Thieves are able to invest time in researching their targets to find a way into the network, said Trey Ford, a global security strategist at the security firm Rapid7. Once they're in, they stay quiet and fly unobserved under the radar. Brian Krebs, who first broke news of the breach in his Krebs on Security blog, reported that the malware was installed in terminals and self-service aisles, which did limit the data loss. This news was announced after the close of trading, of course. Home Depot said the breach had cost $62 million, and that figure could climb in the fourth quarter. Target reported in August that this breach cost $146 million after insurance reimbursements. Have you changed your credit card yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Steve did in Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, how are you?
I wanted to let everybody know, I'm sure you guys have said this long ago and a number of times. There's a scam that's running around on the phone. There's a guy pretending to be from the IRS and trying to scare you into giving them money. And it must be hitting Rochester now, because 3 nights ago I got a funny phone call at around 7 o'clock. Some guy claiming he's from the IRS and that I'm going to be brought up on charges on fraud if I don't call this number and settle up and get my lawyer involved and... who knows what else? And I'm going, okay. Yeah,
and we can take your credit card number.
Promptly went online and reported them to the IRS.
Yep.
Good for you.
And they're more than willing to take your credit card number over the phone to
yes.
Alleviate any. Yep.
You know, and what I loved was that he claimed his name was Steve Johnson.
Steve Johnson.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know. Thanks, Steve.
And
you're not Steve Johnson, are you?
What's hilarious is that he's Steve Johnson with an Indian accent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We get that a lot. Yep. All right. Thanks, Steve.
And there's another one. I'm not positive that this is a scam or not.
Yeah.
But I got an email claiming I won an ungodly amount of money from a Google Draw thing. All I have to do is fill out this form and send it in.
And the form has all your pertinent financial information.
Of course. Yeah. As soon as I saw that, I went, right. I've won $5 million dollars from me on a random draw.
Yep.
Yeah, Google already has my financial information. If they want to give me $5 million, they can just deposit it in my account.
I won the national lottery in Spain once.
Nice. Good for you. There's also a scam going around for donations for Officer Pearson's family. It's sad when people take a tragedy like that. And try to turn it into profit for themselves. But be careful who you are giving money to for that.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's warn everybody again.
Yep.
Any place like a bank or the IRS or anything that's formal like that is not going to call you. They're going to send you registered letters.
Right, exactly. Thank you, Steve. Good information. Terrific. Terrific stuff. Thanks.
Yep. There's been a lot of that cropping up more and more recently. We had a couple of customers this week that got fake your computer is infected messages. And this one was very handy. It gave you a phone number to call for certified Microsoft Live support lines.
Nice.
On her Mac.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. They typically offer to install Log Me In software. To remotely control your computer. Log Me In is a good, reputable company, good software. You know, we tech support people do use it all the time. So that makes it hard to track down these bad guys. Don't fall for any of that. Your antivirus software should catch it. It wouldn't come from a web page. Don't believe cold calls to your house that, you know, we have determined that you're infected. No, they haven't.
Right.
We have determined that you might be gullible enough to give us your credit card now. And gullible's the wrong word. People get scared. We call it scareware.
Yep.
They're scaring you into thinking, oh my goodness, something's wrong with my computer. I still love the one from the FBI claiming that if you don't go to Walmart and buy a money pack, we're going to come and arrest you.
Oh, yeah.
Like the police always give you warning before they come and arrest you.
More importantly, the police are only accepting money packs from Walmart.
Yeah.
Right. Have we got time for our next call?
Yes.
All right. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
Need some help concerning security of internet connections. In particular, I was recently on a cruise to Alaska and was inquiring about how to do internet connection. They were pretty well prepared to talk about the cost and how to do the connection,
right,
but didn't have much about how secure it was.
Yeah.
So I made a trial subscription, and what I found was a little notice on there that said your data may be viewable by others.
Right.
And they didn't go near the word whether it's secure or unsecure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What should that mean, number one? And number two, the fact that someone else could see it, couldn't they possibly be viewing an encrypted information, which means they couldn't make any use of it?
Right.
So can you pick it up from there and help me out?
Yeah, so here's the deal. When you use a network connection, if it's wireless, of course, everybody else in the room gets it because wireless is radio. It's not directional. But even if it's wired, it's going through who knows how many servers or whatever. So what you want to do is make sure your data are encrypted when you send them over the line, particularly when you're going to your bank or wherever. And the way you see that is if you look up at the address bar in your browser, make sure it says HTTPS. That S stands for secure. And you will also generally see a lock or you know some other indication that that's a secure site. So if you're going to your bank, make sure it says HTTPS. If you're going to PayPal or whatever, make sure it says HTTPS. Now, if you're just going to look at a website, and you're not putting in your data. Let's say you're going to buy a pair of jeans off the internet. If you're just looking, it doesn't matter whether it's HTTPS or not, right? Because if somebody knows you're looking for jeans, I'm not entirely sure how that hurts you. But once you're ready to buy, make sure the site that you're going to put your username and password in are HTTPS. What that means is that the data stream is encrypted from your machine all the way to the server. So anybody else sniffing out your data, anybody else looking at the router information that you go through to get to that other server, they can't get at any of your data. They may be able to break it in the future, but you know, if they're the NSA, they've already got this information. But for everybody else, for the average hacker, it takes days, months, years to break the encryption. So you're generally, it's not usually a problem.
But there's an added complication if that, especially like on a cruise ship,
right,
you're using their computer, all that goes out the window. You have no control over their computer. There might be a keystroke logger on it. There might be a SSL security proxy. So you may have an encrypted tunnel, but somebody on the cruise ship, you know, in IT usually, they are decrypting it. So they can cache it, and then they encrypt it again on the way off the ship.
Right.
So you may think you have an encrypted connection at your end, but it's not encrypted to where you think it is. So generally speaking, don't trust a foreign computer that you don't have control over for any type of banking.
Right. And that also is like when you're traveling and you use their computer center, their little data center in the hotel. That's not your computer. Do not trust it.
Most of the time when you go to a secure website, as Nick said, you get that little padlock icon. There's something that's been created called the extended validation, where you get a little green bar. You can usually click on that padlock, and it gives you what we call the chain of trust. So, you know, for example, I went to Canandaigua National Bank, and I click on the icon, and it says this was signed by Canandaigua National Bank.
Right.
So I know I am really encrypted at Canandaigua National Bank. If it says something else or some other name in there, then that's a big warning sign. You may be encrypted, but not with who you think you are.
Okay.
So if you use your own device and you make sure that you're on an encrypted connection with HTTPS, you're generally safe.
Even though they're relaying it up to a satellite.
As long as it's encrypted by the other end.
And they don't make you install something on your computer, like a security certificate.
Right. Then you're going to be good because that encryption has happened in your machine and the decryption happens in the server. So
that's
all
why,
the stuff it passes through.
In my question to you, they use the word viewable. And I'm saying the fact somebody else could see it doesn't mean that they can make any use of it.
Right. And that's absolutely right.
That might imply, though, that they are using a security proxy, which means someone could view your data.
Right.
Or it may just be their lawyers got involved, and so when your account gets hacked, you don't sue the cruise line.
Well, I started out with that second interpretation that Steve just had, that it was mostly something to protect them.
Yeah, right.
It helped me to understand how I was being protected.
Right.
So, okay. Thank you.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but don't go away because we will be back on the other side with a whole nother hour of this nonsense. You're going to be stuck with Steve Ray, with Michael Oden, with me, Nick Francesco, and we're going to be joining all of you with a whole lot more of Soundbites. Please feel free to give us a call. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or you can call toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back shortly with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And those of you who are on the Soundbites site are probably seeing some weird things going on in that middle column. Let me explain. Before we get back to the phones, let me explain what's going on. I have now written a couple of ebooks. One is called I Just Bought a Chromebook, Help. The other called Google Docs, Word Processing in the Cloud. And both of them are available at Amazon, and I'm trying to provide links to them on the Soundbites website because, of course, I personally would like every human being on Earth to buy at least one copy of each. Unfortunately, I'm having a little bit of confusion. The links that I used were to show the pictures of the covers are on Amazon itself. And the pictures that I have are the wrong size. So after the show, I'll have to resize them and re-upload them. So, if you're interested in Chromebooks or you're interested in word processing in Google Docs or you're just interested in buying books that I've written, you can certainly find them. The broken image link, if you click on that, you'll see a link to Amazon and then you can buy the book. And of course, I would. I don't normally beg for personal things, but there you have that. And in just a second, we'll get back to the phones. That'll be about a minute till we do that. So I'm really excited. The worst part about this for me is I am now addicted. It's like crack. There's an app for your phone that will tell you. That will tell you how many of your book you've sold, and I just keep going to it and and looking for new sales. It's all right. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
Hey, I got two questions for you, real quick. I once got that bogus FBI thing. And paid a fellow at a computer store $130 to get rid of it. So I'm wondering if I was ripped off. Question number two is, why is Wi-Fi so finite? Like, for instance, I teach at a school building. I don't want to name the place, but the initials are Eastman School of Music. And from one room to the other, you might run out of Wi-Fi because it's in classroom X, but not in practice room Y. Why,
right.
Why is it so finite?
Well, let's answer those each individually. The FBI scam, if you only paid $130 to get rid of it, that's not horribly bad.
Oh, good. Okay.
So that's not a big deal. The fact that it's now gone, you know, is worth more than that, but $130 is not bad at all.
One of the things we always say in the service industry is you're not really paying us for the service to remove it. You're paying us for the service to know how to remove it. So you could have done it yourself if you knew how.
Right. You go to a service station for two reasons. One, they have the knowledge. Two, they have the tools.
Yep.
And, okay, wonderful. Okay.
Yeah. And Wi-Fi is finite because it's radio.
It's an inverse square or inverse cube?
I think it's an inverse square, but although it's not beyond my general level of, I have no idea.
So,
but the idea behind radio is that it is finite and it is blockable
is the bigger issue.
Right. So if, for example, you go one way, you suddenly find yourself behind a wall that has rebar in it, and that's blocking the signal. But if you go the other way, there's no rebar in the wall. There's no refrigerator in the way. There's no microwave in the way. There's no, you know, any of that stuff. And so you get a signal farther along.
And
it's the same reason that, go ahead.
The different frequencies can penetrate different types of material.
Right. It's the same reason that you're listening to the radio and you go into a valley or between big buildings and the signal cuts out.
Right. Yeah.
because it's just radio. It is Ethernet is radio to begin with. Even when you're using it in a wire, it's actually radio. It's using the wire as the carrier signal rather than a carrier signal. But it is blockable, and therefore, and then, of course, it fades out after a while because it's just radio.
We talk about radio waves in space. They propagate forever, and that's the inverse square law. Twice the distance is half the power.
Right.
But you continue. It was one of the old thought projects. If you half the distance every step you make, when do you reach the wall?
Right.
Never.
Right.
Because you can keep going in half and half and half and half.
Yeah, that's somebody's paradise. Yeah.
It just gets weaker and weaker and weaker, so you need a bigger and bigger antenna at the other end. So there have been cases. I think the record for Wi-Fi is like 200 kilometers. Or maybe 300. And the problem there is they ran into the curvature of the Earth.
Right.
So they can't make it go any farther because the Earth curved and the antenna curved away from them.
Right.
Right. Okay. Well, that answers that. Thank you very much.
So,
if that wall has metal in it, it blocks the signal. Chicken wire. Older houses have a terrible time because it's chicken wire and plaster. That's sometimes called a Faraday cage that
it's
blocks
exactly
radio signals.
My wife wanted her computer in the library, and that is the one room in the house that I cannot get a signal because there's chicken wire in the walls because the walls curve, and they had to put the stuff in. That's the way that goes. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I actually have two things. First, when you were talking about the encryption when you're someplace else, out of town or not at home anyway, could you, and I'm going to take you back to high school, compare and contrast encryption versus a VPN network? And if you have time, I have three computers in the house. One of my drop boxes suddenly stopped syncing, and I don't know how to make it sync again. But if you could compare and contrast the encryption versus a VPN, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Here's the deal. Encryption takes your data and
I guess I meant effectiveness.
Right. Well, let me explain to you what happens with encryption versus a VPN.
Okay.
Encryption takes your data, encrypts it, and then sends it over the public internet. VPN creates a tunnel through the internet that is completely private. So with VPN, people don't actually see any of your data at all, encrypted, not encrypted, anything. So if you have a VPN connection, say, to your work, and a VPN connection requires a VPN server at the other end. So if you're going, don't bother to call and ask if your bank has a VPN connection. They don't. Well, they might, but they're not going to give it to you. Because what that does is it means that you are essentially on their network, isn't it? It is a complete extension of their network, and it absolutely hides itself from the regular internet. It can be discovered, but not by the average thief, okay? So if you have a VPN network, you're tunneled through the internet and hidden from the internet, and you do encryption, you're pretty safe. But if you only do encryption, people will see that encrypted data stream. Is that clear?
And could theoretically decrypt it if the encryption was weak.
So right. If you could only do one, you would choose VPN.
Yes, you would.
Because part of what a VPN does is also encrypt the traffic. So it's encrypted and it's anonymous. The other end doesn't know where you're coming from. As in addition to can't see the data along the way.
Right. Is that clear?
Yep. So basically, I've been using a VPN. I don't need to go encryption if I can use the VPN.
No, although you are safer with both.
Correct. Okay.
Now, for your Dropbox, do you get an error message?
No. Something that I know is in Dropbox, I know I put it in Dropbox, and I just cannot see it on the other computer, on a different computer. Not there.
You don't get a report that says you're using an old
Nope.
Version permission denied, rejected by server.
Nope, none of that stuff.
I would try logging out of Dropbox on that computer, reboot, and then log back in.
I would also, and if that doesn't work, I would uninstall Dropbox, reinstall it, and log back in.
All right.
Those are the suggestions, in fact, that the Dropbox people themselves will give you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Hope you have a good day. Thank you for the information.
Thanks. Have fun.
Yep.
Bye. So, yeah, it's Dropbox is a pretty cool product. It's been breached any number of times. I currently am using copy.com, but both are usable, and it's a way to get your stuff backed up into the cloud without having to do a lot of work yourself. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Macedon, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's up?
Thank you. I'm hearing your show for the very first time, and it's a wonderful, wonderful show.
Well, thank you. I love hearing that.
You were talking about the Nexus phones, and I picked up a Nexus 7 tablet last year.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love it.
I love mine too. It's a fantastic
device, 32 gigs for like $240.
Yep.
And the great thing about the Nexus is that all of the apps work so well together. Google Maps,
yep.
Gmail, Chrome. They're all so integrated. I've used other Android devices, and sometimes Maps doesn't come up when you click on directions, and it's frustrating.
Yep.
It's funny that VPN just came up, because I actually found myself in the Islamic Republic of Iran for 2 months this last spring.
Do you know how you got there, or was this one of those missing your kidney?
It was planned.
Oh,
and,
good.
I had never used a VPN, didn't know anything about them, but everybody said, oh, if you want to use Facebook, Twitter, really, if you want to do anything on the internet, you have to use a VPN.
Right.
And I found a great one for Android called Reindeer that worked amazingly. Everybody who had an Apple device had a really hard time finding and using a VPN. And it made a big difference for me having an Android device. It was just one of those things that everybody ended up using my Nexus 7 tablet to check their emails, to check their Facebook, for, you know, Skype, for all those kind of communications.
Right. And did you use OpenVPN or one of their servers?
One of their servers. They gave you like four or five different locations
nice.
To go through: Germany, Bangkok, U.S.
Right.
And went through one of theirs.
Yeah, OpenVPN has free services for limited use, casual use, when you're on your trip, for free VPN services for Windows, Mac, Android, and iOS.
Yeah. Right. Well, the Reindeer looks like a pretty nifty product. I had not seen it before, and this is my favorite part of the show, when people call up and tell me about something I didn't know. I love that.
Well, the reason I ended up with that one was I went on the Google Play Store, and it blocked me from downloading most of the apps. And then in Reindeer, it had a little, a URL link that said if the country you're in is blocking the download, just click on this link and it'll download automatically.
Nice.
Because
these folks know exactly what's going on in troubled parts of the world.
Yep. Yeah, clearly they do. Nice. Well,
thanks so much, guys.
Good to know. Thank you so much. Love to hear that. Keep listening. We're here every Saturday, whether we want to, rain or shine.
And that is another use of VPNs that we hear about, is if you're in a country that blocks certain things, you go to China and they block Facebook, you can use a VPN so that you come out of the VPN and you're in the UK or you're in France. And so it doesn't know you're in China anymore. And that lets you appear to be coming from a different country, so the service you're getting to will let you in.
Yep. All right. Yeah. It's and again, you can use the OpenVPN or whatever when you're in a public place. They discourage you from using it regularly because it's quite a drain on their servers. But it is usable. OpenVPN.org. Was it org?
OpenVPN.net.
.net. Okay, that actually makes sense. All right, our next caller is Donna from Rochester. Welcome, Donna. What's up?
Good afternoon. We recently got a virus on our desktop, and the computer went to soft mode, and the server, the drivers were actually wiped out or corrupted. Is there any place locally that you could recommend that we could fix this?
Is it a Mac or Windows?
It's Windows Vista.
Ew. Okay.
No.
No. Buy a new machine. No.
Five-year-old computer, but yeah. For our purposes, it was fine, and then it did
right.
Corruption and the virus.
The problem you're going to have, Donna, and I have to be honest about this, Vista has not been supported for years, and so you may not find drivers available anymore.
Do you still have the driver disk that may have come with the computer?
It said drivers came with installed in the computer. When I called, it's Dell. When I called Dell, they said you have no driver. They gave me a link, but I'm just concerned about other corruption or virus in the whole system.
Right. There are several places that you can take your machine. Most of the dealers in Rochester are very reputable people. So there's probably MacEv doesn't do.
We don't do that many PCs, but we do. We're mostly Mac, but we do work on some PCs. We had an underwriter here for a while that did PC repair work too.
Yep. And you know, it depends. You're in the city. Certainly, Lightspeed Computers, MicroWorks. The computer doctor, depending on where you are in the city, any of those would be, you know, whichever one is closest. They're all good people.
Yep.
Okay.
And we
okay.
do tend to like the smaller independent shops. There's nothing wrong with the big chain stores, but you often find more knowledgeable people at the smaller chain
shops.
Well,
and I'm a huge believer in keeping your money local if you can.
I do. We like to support local for even restaurants and stores. And
there you go.
Mom and pop shops. So the three suggestions you gave me, I will look into. Thank you so much.
There you go. Good luck. All of them are reputable, and there are others that I'm blanking on at the moment. I apologize. But those are all reputable people. And really, pick the one closest to you, right?
Thank you. Yeah, of course. Yep. Thank you so much.
There you go.
And as we had mentioned earlier in the show, we're seeing more and more fake virus warning messages. So if you're already running an antivirus program and have been keeping it up to date, it may have been a fake message.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Joel from Pittsford, New York on the line. Welcome, Joel. What's up?
Hi, guys. Another great show. And Nick,
Thank you.
Look forward to spending a couple bucks on your books.
God bless you. I appreciate that.
But I have a PowerPoint to PDF question. I teach computer classes to adults, and I use PowerPoint for the presentations, and I convert the slides to PDFs in black and white so they don't have to spend a fortune in ink to print them.
Right.
But what I'd like to do is create the PDFs with multiple slides on a page.
Right.
And I know they can print multiple slides on the page, but I would like to send them to them with multiple slides on a page. Is there a way to do that?
Theoretically, what you can do, are you in Windows?
Yeah.
You can print directly to PDF, and it should print. I haven't tried this myself, but you should be able to print directly to PDF from PowerPoint, and it will work in exactly the same way regular printing does. So you can say two-sided, well, that doesn't matter, but you can say, you know, turn it sideways or print six to a page or whatever you want to do.
Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about that. I'll give that a try because I know I can print, you know, the PDFs multiple to a page, but that doesn't help them because they're often not sophisticated enough to do that.
If I can
send them the PDFs, that'd be great. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
We used to call that, we still do sometimes, two up.
Yeah.
So a lot of times in your print command, there's a layout function, and you can say two up or four up or 16 up. How many pages per sheet do you want it to be? And the more pages per sheet, the smaller it is. I used to be able to read 4 pages per sheet, but now now I can only read 2 pages per sheet.
Right.
And then if you do it double-sided, then it really can, especially for those really long PDF manuals, it cuts down on the amount of paper you're using.
Right. All right, our next caller is Don from Greece, New York. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Hi, thanks. Enjoy listening to your show. I have a mid-2011 iMac and recently upgraded from Snow Leopard to Mavericks. And I find the performance has slowed down considerably. Is there anything I could do to make things better?
How much memory do you have and how much free disk space do you have?
4 gigabytes of memory.
Yeah, if you open any window on the desktop at the bottom, it should show you how much free disk space you have. 4 gigs is okay. More is always better. We kind of get annoyed sometimes when companies say the minimum requirement is 2 gigs. Okay, yeah, that's the minimum required. It will run. You won't like it. It won't be very zippy.
And you can't run many things.
You can't run anything else.
Right.
Yeah. And so even with 4 gigs, it can be a little bit slower. So more RAM can always help. Now, in you said you had a 21-inch model?
Yes.
It's hard to say. Some of the 21s had 2 memory slots, and some of them had 4. So if you're lucky, you have 4 slots and can add more. If you're not that lucky, you have to take out, with the 4 gigs of RAM is probably 2 2s. So you take out a 2, put in a 4, take out both 2s, put in 2 4s to get more memory.
Yeah, I'm looking to see I don't see how many slots I have.
If you go to About This Mac and then More Info, from the Apple menu, About This Mac, and then More Info, there's a memory tab that will tell you how many slots you have and how much memory is in each slot.
Oh, there it is. I have 2 empty slots.
Oh, good. So you can add more memory
without
removing what's already in
there. You can add 4 gig and get 6. No, how many you got already?
He's got 4 now.
He's got 4 now.
So you could add 2 2s to get 8. You could put in 4s. That's probably got a 16 gig maximum. You could add more memory to it. Okay. You don't have to install 2 at a time, but it does run a little faster if you install matched pairs.
Matched pairs. I have a 500 gigabyte disk that's half full.
So it's not disk space. So sometimes not having enough disk space can be a performance issue too.
And a 2011 Mac is still beefy enough to run Mavericks without an issue.
Yep.
As long as you got the memory.
Right. Is it? I'm bringing up my spec sheet too. Do you remember offhand whether it's a Core 2 or Core 5? Because that would also help. The better the processor in it is, the better.
It's that also 2.5 core i5.
So you have the i5. That's good.
Yeah.
So it's probably a RAM issue for performance issues. So adding a little more RAM will probably make it faster.
Okay, we'll give that a try. Thanks a lot.
There you go. Yeah, the reality is that these days, as people, as the companies make better and faster and whatever operating systems, you don't have enough RAM.
And market pressure wants them to release it faster and faster and faster.
Right.
They don't bother optimizing anymore.
Right. Nobody optimizes. All right, our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, guys. I think Steve answered one question I had. When my phone updated a few weeks ago, I began noticing that I'd have to enter my password for my mail once or twice a day. And I think something about the update must be the change in operating systems or some kind of hitch, so I'm ignoring that. What I really called for was that I noticed at the top of my phone screen, I have an iPhone 5. I'm waiting to be able to walk into the store to get iPhone 6. And I have iPhone 5, and there's a rectangle at the top with a VPN inside of it. And I kind of ignored that, but what's going on with that? Do you have any idea?
Well, there's a VPN client built into the iDevices. So you can connect to a VPN server, but you have to subscribe to a VPN service company. And there are free ones like OpenVPN and ProXPN. So the client software is already in your phone. That little VPN target shouldn't light up unless you actually are connected to a VPN.
Not that I know of. I have to disconnect it, I guess.
Are you still connected to your university's VPN?
That could be.
No, I'm not. I'm using my cell phone. I'm at home, so definitely not connected to the university, yeah. And I don't have any kind of VPN on my home server here.
Yeah, so you can check that under settings, under general, under VPN. Let me just see. So if I turn it on, maybe if it's just turned on but not actually connected, the little flag lights up.
Okay, well, that's all I had. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Scott.
It's nice that the devices, I bet Android, too, has the VPN client software already built in. You just need the other end of the VPN server.
Right. Which is always a nice, like we said, it keeps you more secure on the internet.
Yep.
Well, in the last 5 minutes, nobody's bought my book. I'm just saying. I am. I'm addicted to this thing. It's like crack. It's a product called Afterword, and it's an app, and you put in your credentials, and it knows what books you've written, and then you get to refresh it. It doesn't auto refresh, which would at least lower the crack value for me, because then it would just tell me. But I refresh it. I try to do it like twice a day, and it seems to happen about twice a minute. It makes me insane, and I'm still doing it.
That's
horrible.
One of the other things Stephen Colbert had is there's an app called Checky that will for the iPhone that will track how many times you check your iPhone.
Oh, nice.
And so he had to keep checking his iPhone
to
get his number up because there's a social component. So people in your social circle can see your Checky number. And you can see theirs, so you always want to beat their Checky number.
Oh, looks like Steve is not involved in any social anything because he's just sitting there staring at his phone.
Yeah. But you have to lift it up and down so the accelerometer knows you're checking it.
Oh, I see. Okay, good.
Starting in like next year, it's going to be, and it's the late show with Steve, and hang on, he's still on his phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For those of you who are really waiting for the gold Apple Watch, the Apple Watch Edition. Apparently, they're calling it the
gold.
Apple Watch Edition.
Yeah, there's. It doesn't make much sense.
No, none of that does.
Special edition would make sense.
Yes, it's just the edition.
Yeah.
A jewelry source publicly stated that the gold 18-karat version of the Apple iWatch, the Apple Watch, could cost around $1,200 retail when it launches in January. $1,200. This has been corroborated based on size and weight by jewelers familiar with the material Apple is using to make the Apple Watch edition pieces. It should be noted that this is an estimate and the piece could come in well below that price or above it. So it's a guess. Although there is still some confusion as to whether the watch will be gold-plated or actually made of gold, the jewelers suggested that this would be suboptimal. It would be suboptimal not to make the watch out of solid gold alloy, a decision that would drive up the price. The estimate is based on the leaked design images of the iWatch. Look, people are going to call it the iWatch. I can't help myself. It doesn't matter what Apple
Tim
wants
Cook
it to be.
Makes the same mistake too.
Oh, good. I'm in good company then.
Yeah.
Or perhaps he is. Chad Rakicki, a watch expert in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, said that a case the size and shape of the Apple Watch in 18-karat gold would cost about $600 to make. The rest, the electronics and markup, could double that price. That doesn't mean that all of the Apple Watches will rest in the rarefied atmosphere of haute horlogerie. I can look the words up. I can't pronounce them. The lower-end sports versions will start at $350. Presumably, the standard version, simply called the Apple Watch, will receive some sort of premium over that. The edition watches, however, are expensive because gold is expensive, even at 18 carats and intermixed with Apple's alloys. This suggests an interesting move by the company to turn Apple stores into luxury destinations. While I'm sure Prada and Louis Vuitton and Jimmy Choo are clamoring to be given access to Apple's unique band connectors, the upside for a more fashionable, luxury-leaning Apple Watch display in stores means the company will control quality and, more important, control profit on band upgrades. Apple is entering a fascinating new world of potential partnerships, as is, to some degree, the makers of Appleware devices. Now consumers are going to have to get used to armed guards standing over cases of tastefully blinged out Apple Watches. So are you ready to sell the kids for an Apple Watch edition? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yes, it's the Rolex Apple Watch.
Well, and exactly. John
the most expensive watch in the world.
John Gruber during Fireball said that he wouldn't be surprised by a $5,000 price tag on the high-end model.
No, nor would I.
Because that's cheap. You know, Rolex, 15, 20 grand minimum.
Right.
And a lot of the other watch companies, Guess and Tag Heuer, have sent letters to Tim, you know, welcome to the watch world, and yeah, we're thinking of doing that too, I think.
Yeah, right. Right.
So Apple may not have didn't invent the smartwatch, but maybe they'll push everyone else into making one too.
Well, and what's interesting is the Pebble watch, when it first came out, was a few hundred dollars.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what the heck is wrong with these people? A few hundred dollars? That's a ridiculous amount of money to spend for a watch. Now that's the average price.
Well, see, that's all of us that bought our Timex chronographs for $40 and were mad that it cost that much. That's the calculator watch and world time zone and...
That's for all of us who got a watch with our Happy Meals.
Yeah.
That's for all of us who don't wear watches because we have phones now. I used to wear a pocket watch. If they came out with a smart pocket watch, I'd be all over that thing.
There probably will be someone that makes a pocket watch band for it.
I don't want a square pocket watch.
That's the other thing some people are interested in. They're square. They're not round like watches typically are.
Right. The Moto 360 comes in round, and I like that.
I can just see this. Okay, somebody walks by and asks you what time it is. Okay, and you pull out your phone, you pull out your watch, you pull out everything. Well, my phone says it's this, my watch says it's this, my other watch says it's this.
Right. Now, the theory is they're all synced.
Why would you need... an Apple Watch if you have an Apple phone.
It's such a first world problem. They talked about that when the Galaxy Gear first came out. That when you get a phone call or a text, it's easier to look at your wrist to see if you have to address it right now than fumbling in your pocket to pull your phone out.
I just don't understand why, if you have one, why you need the other one.
Because you're a gadget geek.
See, you're not looking at this from the point of view of, I have an Apple Watch. I am so much better than you. Or I have the Moto Watch or whatever one it is. It has nothing to do with needing to look at the time. It's entirely a status symbol. It is entirely a status symbol. If you just want to look at the time, go to McDonald's, buy a Happy Meal, and strap the Dora the Explorer watch on your hand. That's not what it's about. It's got nothing to do with telling the time. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you want to refute my assumption that that's what the watch is all about, give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Yeah,
it's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We've been discussing various this's and that's and looking at the VPN on all these mobile devices, and they all have something for it, but it's obviously you got to have something at the other end as well, whether you use OpenVPN at openvpn.net or something else that'll work. We've also been discussing my books. And I'm addicted. I can't help myself. Look, I'm even still talking about it, and I shouldn't be. Our next caller is Joan. John, what did I say? John, it's John from Honey Eye or Honey Eye Falls? John.
No, this is Jeff, actually. It's just Honey Eye.
Okay,
no
Jeff from Honey Eye, sorry.
Honey, oi, look at the falls.
Stop.
Yeah. Hey, I just had a real quick question for you. I unfortunately have been keeping the side of the CPU case off for heat issues, and my cat Randy has been sleeping in there to stay warm. He likes the heat, and I'm just curious if he's maybe been hogging all my RAM. It's been running slow.
Yeah.
What can sometimes happen with pets, even they tend to like to sleep on top of it even when the case is closed, all the loose fur and dander gets sucked into the fans. The fans get clogged up and reduces the cooling efficiency, which makes the computer run hot, which often makes them slow down so they don't overheat.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been cooler out lately. Some of the windows are broken in the house. I haven't, I haven't fixed them yet. But Randy's been kind of cold. He's been sleeping in there. So I wasn't sure if he was, hogging all my RAM because it's been real slow when I was.
Listen, since the windows are broken anyway, knock out the sills, stick them in the fireplace, light them, let Randy sleep near those.
Thank you. I knew you guys have an answer.
There you go. Thanks, Jeff.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
I know a lot of our customers in corporate environments, during the winter, they put their towers on the floor to keep their feet warm.
Yep.
But then during the summer, they have to put it on top of the desk so it blows away.
My cat does not like to sleep on my computer. That's good. Unfortunately, she likes to sleep on the keyboard.
Yeah. Cats are so mad that we switched to LCDs. Because they used to sleep on top of the CRT all the time.
All the time, and that was nice and warm.
It's really tricky to get a cat to balance on top of that real thin LCD. We should ask Snoopy how he does it on the peak of his doghouse.
Yeah, right. I still have it. I had a 17-inch LCD monitor. That thing would heat up an airplane hangar.
Yep.
You know, that thing, when I ran that thing, I could turn the heat off in the computer room. I'm good for the winter. I'm good for the sun. The summer, I had to have air conditioning. CRTs generated an awful lot of heat. That's why so many of us, back in the day when we had, televisions that had CRTs in them, we would not put them back against the wall or in a corner. We'd angle them out a ways. We were told to do that by the salespeople because that left circulation in the back for air.
And unfortunately, that's what we see a lot of times in computer towers, is it will get shoved up against the wall, so now there's no airflow for the fan to come out the back. All the cables in the back get kinked. Or worse yet, were those computer hutches that had this little door you could put the computer in, and then it closed it off tight, and there's no airflow at all going through that little cubby.
Right, we put one of those in at RIT at the Saunders College for something, and I kept saying we're really just going to burn it out. You're just going to burn it out. We drilled holes in it, we put fans in it, we did everything. It still got overheated, but at least we were better off.
So that's how you get a faster one every couple of years. You just burn out the old one.
That's exactly right, golly Ned. That is exactly right. What else have we got for the news? Oh, the FBI.
Oh, I was going to mention on that Home Depot credit thing. Most of the companies that are getting breached, Home Depot included, are offering you a free year of credit card fraud protection from one of the national services. So I posted a link to the one that Home Depot was doing, but I remember Target did the same thing. So every time there's one of these breaches, you can subscribe to these credit card fraud alert systems yourself, but there's a fee. And so it's nice that they're paying for that. But in most cases, your bank is already doing credit card fraud protection and will stop things that look suspicious. But if like most people, you have a bunch of different credit cards from a bunch of different banks, there's no aggregating the activity across them. And so what might look like a perfectly normal transaction on three credit cards, when looked at as a whole, could be very suspicious.
Right. Did you say fraud protection?
Fraud protection, yes.
The FBI's Next Generation Identification, or NGI, system is now fully operational, citizen. After more than 3 years of development, the Bureau announced that development on the project is complete, and it will be rolling out the new features for ongoing criminal notifications, as well as a controversial facial recognition feature called the Interstate Photo System, or IPS. IPS will serve as an image searching capability of photographs associated with criminal identities, according to the release. The facial recognition system has come under fire from privacy groups for mixing traditional mugshot photos with non-criminal faces pulled from employment records and background data checks. The system is expected to collect as many as 52 million faces in total. Some in the industry, considering, you know, we've got billions of people, that's not such a big deal, but still, some in the industry have also called out the IPS as ineffective based on its relatively low rate of success. For a given face, NGI returns a list of 50 candidates and only promises an 85% chance that the suspect will be on the list. So not quite as good as NCIS. Still, for anyone concerned about the privacy implications of facial recognition tech, the new system is cause for alarm. Law enforcement groups across the country will soon start working with the system, and we're likely to see more stories like this one as the technology spreads.
We already see that on TV shows where they talk about running the fingerprints through AFIS or through NCIS or NCIC or Interpol, and
right.
There's a tattoo database that works the same way.
Yep.
And now we're adding a face database.
All right. So are you ready for nationwide facial recognition, citizen? Don't bother to give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
What was the last cop show to bring people in to look at mug books?
Yeah.
Because this is basically what it is. They've digitized and automated and centralized all the mug books. It used to be every police station had their own set of printed, you know, photographic mugshots.
Right.
And you would have to look through those to try to identify the perpetrators.
There was probably a huge controversy when that came in.
Yeah.
What's this newfangled photography thing they're doing? That's just not right. That's terrible.
I don't know why, but I still...
I'm not a big fan of this stuff. I'm not saying I'm for it. I'm just saying that's probably the same argument that was used in 1860. Yep.
I still remember an episode of Bonanza where... What was the cook's name?
Hop Singh.
Hop Singh. He introduced the town, was it Carson City, to fingerprints. The Chinese had been using fingerprints for a really long time, and there was this big court case, and Little Joe was accused of some crime, and they showed their fingerprints, and no, he didn't do it. And of course, because it was a TV show, while Hop Singh was looking at the fingerprints in the courtroom and telling people this is not him, he identified the actual killer.
Yep. Right.
It was in the courtroom that they got a sample of the fingerprint from. So fingerprints go back a really long way.
Yeah, they really do.
Really quickly, in the next 3 minutes, we have Dennis from Rochester on the line.
All right, Dennis, what's up?
City of Rochester Police Department, as far as I know, still use what they call six packs. They have to show you six photos, and you have to they print them out, and you have to identify one of the six if you're identifying a suspect. That's it.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, thanks.
I remember on the TV shows, they brought in a couple of like undercover cops or something to fill their lineups, and the joke was the dirty, beat up, homeless looking cop always got fingered as the bad guy. Not again. Sorry, Phil.
Yeah, right.
And that was Bonanza episode 13 of season 10, named The Mark of Guilt. Hop Singh and fingerprints. It found it.
Found it. Of course it does. Of course it does, but you still needed me to tell you it was Hop Singh.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name. Yeah.
All right, beating Google since, 1950, really.
And it was Virginia City, not Carson City.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
That's one of those trick questions. Carson City is the capital of Nevada.
Right. Right.
Not Las Vegas. Yep.
We've lost the ability to, like, you know, name all 50 state capitals and all that stuff that used to be
name all the
so
presidents.
Common.
There were so fewer of them when you were a kid.
Well,
it was easy to memorize.
Washington and the other guy really was all we had to know.
Yeah.
Washington and one of the Adams boys. I don't remember. Yep. But that, now there's what? There's an easy half a dozen, so I can't remember them all.
Yeah.
But that's the way that works. It's, I want to thank all of you, by the way, who have been buying my books. So my books, plural, I'm a multi-authored. All right, they're self-published. Don't harsh my mellow.
But they're on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of.
That's quite a complicated form you have to fill out.
It really is. It took me minutes, I tell you.
Yeah.
it's actually pretty cool. There are people who are making millions of dollars off of this. Clearly, I'm never going to be one of them unless I start writing romance novels, which are raking it in. Dinosaur romance novels. That's right. That's right.
Why didn't I know about this? You didn't tell me sooner.
I beg your pardon. There is one woman writing dinosaur romance novels. This is an actual genre.
Yeah.
I don't remember her name, but Steve is about to find it. And she writes romance novels, women and dinosaurs together. And what's her name?
Christy Sims.
That's it, Christy Sims. And she is writing these things, and apparently they're selling very, very, very well.
In the genre of dinosaur erotica.
Dinosaur erotica.
It's only 99 cents, so you can sell a ton of them.
That's exactly how it works. You know, who's not going to spend a buck to see what those are like? All right, that's it for another week. Again, let me thank all those of you who bought or are at least contemplating buying my book. I want to thank Steve Ray and certainly Michael Oden, who did a magnificent job today, as always, even with the new stuff on the board. But listen, don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, and that would be right here on the truly great, and let's not forget, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks again, and we'll see you all, or at least hear you all, next week.